Welcome to the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association wake-up call show, and we're glad that you could join us. And I'm Bob Griswold, and I'm going to turn that over to Mary.
Hi, this is Mary Griswold. This is going to be the last of one of our Gen Z shows for a while, although we hope to do a reprise next year and see where everybody is. So I'm going to let our Gen Z people introduce themselves and one sentence about your background.
My name is Emmanuel Ruiz. I'm from here in New Bern, and I'm a first-generation American.
My name's Josh Kaur. I'm a city commissioner in Havelock, and yeah, that's it.
I'm Dr. Hannah Kaur. I'm actually a professor at ECU. I'm actually a millennial, so I'm the outlier in this conversation.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Emily Boyd, and I am a junior music education student at East Carolina.
Okay, now we're going to throw some questions at you and kind of let you sort them out.
And again, it's just a roundtable discussion. It's not a we're not pinning
there are
anybody.
No right answers.
We're not pinning anybody against the wall. We're not using a pinata or whatever else. And
you all have ideas about how things are and how things should be. What do you see as the strongest influence on those ideas? I'm going to start with M.
I would have to say that the strongest influence on my ideas has to be social media. I mean, just look at my generation. We've been raised pretty much all on social media, and everything that we're used to consuming is on social media nowadays. So I think that seeing more personal posts from creators on social media platforms are that's a lot of the time where I get my information is from more personal, more one-on-one accounts rather than large news sources.
Okay.
This somewhat relates to Emily's answer. I feel like I'm influenced most by experiences, things that I've seen, heard, felt. And the reason I say it relates somewhat to Emily's is because on social media, I feel like there is this specific image of how people experience things. You know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. You're not looking necessarily at the way things actually are. And to that extent, you know, who's to say my experiences are altogether valid all the time? But they certainly affect a lot of the ideas and the ways I think about things.
I think one of the biggest influences for me is looking back at history and, like, when research is done on, like, okay, this has been tried. Here are the results of what happened with that. And so, like, a lot of the decision-making processes I have now, and it didn't used to be this way, but now it's based off of, well, what has been tried, and then trying to kind of work your way backward of like, okay, well, if these five things have already been tried, then, and they've all failed in one way or another, let's try something different. And that ends up putting me in an awkward position with both liberals and conservatives, because I usually poke holes in both sides of those theories because we both fail on both sides.
I would say, to summarize it all down to, if it's going to be any platform, it's going to be YouTube rather than social media. YouTube is just where I would watch longer form essays, lectures, and whatever it would be. But specifically, YouTube led me down the road into reading two books in specific, The Law by Friedrich Bastiat, which was basically my intro into political thought, and it just basically framed everything else since then. And then about a year or maybe 2 years ago, a recent reading of The Servile State by Henry Belloc. That one was a big eye-opener for myself. It really reframed and had me get a better understanding of things. But fundamental to anything else, I think, is how we socialize. So it would be social media for some of us, but for me, it's going to be my church and my family. Having a distinctly Hispanic origin, just finding out, hey, how did that affect through my experience there, but also through the realm as a Christian and seeing, hey, how has the church taught me? How have they raised me to believe?
I want to go back to something Josh said, because I think it is relevant to Generation Z. Jamestown and Plymouth both had the same charter company, which required that they set up a communal living system where no one owned individual property. In both cases, they nearly starved to death until they switched it over to a free market system. just for the record, what we have not is free market, it's crony capitalism. But when the governor of Massachusetts swapped over from the communist system to the you have your own patch of land and you can barter with your neighbors, it was amazing how much the crops increased. Let me ask all of you, did you learn that in school?
Yes and no, not the exact very like line of events, but more or less the exact same framework. Rather than focusing on Plymouth, we focused on Jamestown. Mm-hmm. So in basic, yes, I'd say I got that information and then just in a slightly different phrasing.
Okay.
I did not learn it in high school, although I'd have a different education background because I was homeschooled all the way up until college, and then I went to college. But I did learn it in college because the professor I had was more of an originalist, so his philosophy was very much about like teaching the way things were so that you could understand the way things are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine would have been included in high school, so yeah.
Yes, I took Turning Points and AP US History in high school, and I had a really great teacher who would often go into depth about those kinds of events and the kind of things that led up to those events happening. And so I did learn about those things in high school.
Okay.
Oh, quick one. Now, Manny, you mentioned Frederick Bastiat mm-hmm. and the law.
Yes.
Do you remember when that was originally published?
Pardon?
Do you know when that was originally published?
That was right after the July days of the French in the French Revolt. So I'm like 1858.
1848, I believe.
48, right
yeah, yeah. So it's amazing that it is a real document that has made it through the tests of time.
Oh, it has. And with
and
the other
totally
one,
totally relevant.
It really is. Yeah, both of them. Servile State was written, I think, just 20 years after that as well. So you have these two really good books, both coming from French authors. There, going through this great time of revolution. Giving great insights.
Okay. As your generation comes into leadership, what are the things, some of the things that you want to accomplish or change?
One of the things, I've actually been kind of thinking about this ever since our last little segment together. I've been thinking about how a lot of the problems that we experience in our society, just at least economic-wise right now, are because of how much power these big corporations have over our government and over our political system. So if I had to change one thing, it would be how much involvement these big box companies have in our government. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Hannah?
This one's tricky for me because it feels so small-scale compared to some of the other things that could be changed, but I'm just going to contextualize my answer based on who I am, which is an educator at the end of the day. I've been a part of and experienced education in the sense that I've been told what to think, not how to think. And so I think the biggest thing for me in terms of what I want to see accomplished or change would be, insofar as I can affect that change, is to teach students how to think, not necessarily what to be thinking, but how to have critical thinking on their own, which on the surface level seems like a simple thing. You would think that many would be able to move in that direction, but it's not the case as much anymore. So I would say that's something that I want to see change, because I feel like once that happens, it splinters off into other possibilities.
Well, that's you can create a domino effect with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very easily.
And it's a bit more tangible for me in the sense of what could be changed. Yeah.
I have a long list of things that I could go on, but I try to, in every time I see a lot of things happening, I try to prioritize what are the biggest things. And for me, I think in America, we have lost a sense of understanding the way the structure of America was intended to be. And one of the biggest things that we have lost is the ability for the states to individually stand up against the federal government. And part of that, I believe, came from the 17th Amendment. So for me,
yes,
one of my biggest things would be if I, you know, we're king for a day, could snap my fingers and make whatever happen. One of the first things I do is get rid of the 17th Amendment.
Josh, can I get you to define the 17th Amendment for the public?
The 17th Amendment was basically what it changed was it took the senators in the Senate from being elected by their general assemblies of their states and made it elected by the people. And the reason why I say that needs to be repealed is because what the intent was is the House of Representatives would represent the people's, opinions, and like the people's opinions can sway back and forth very quickly. But the states also had an interest in the federal government and how their federal government was run. So the senators would basically represent the states, while the representatives would represent the people.
And the senators had the ability to be recalled by the individual state.
Absolutely.
If they weren't representing the state properly.
And I think the reason we've lost a lot of that is because we've basically said, you know, states just don't matter in their voice. And it's like, no, states should matter because every state has a different way of thinking.
One of the places that the 17th Amendment, having not been there, would have made a significant difference was in the passage of the recent Inflation Reduction Act, I believe it was called, that Senator Manchin voted for. Had we not had the 17th Amendment, he would have immediately been recalled for that vote. Wouldn't have voted that way had he known he was accountable to his state legislature.
And not just with that vote, and not just with that senator, but with a lot of votes, there would have been senators recalled because their state legislator would have said, you are not representing the interests of
yes.
the state.
Folks, we're going to break in, take a quick break, and listen to our sponsors and supporters. And thanks for staying with us.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back, and thanks for staying with us. I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to go to Manny. I think, were you going to answer this question?
The question was, what are some of the things you would like to accomplish or change?
If I'm going to use the same example as Josh, like kink for a day, snap your fingers, and it happens, I'd have to pick between four different things, but I'll narrow it down to like two. Abortion has always been a top of mind subject for me. So if I could snap my fingers and make it completely abolished overnight, that would be fantastic. But other than that, maybe if it's not a cultural thing, if it's like an economic issue, I'd say banking reform. Because like you said earlier, corporation, we don't live under capitalism. We live under corporatocracy. We live under rule by corporations and their influence. So if we could say, hey, we're going to give money back to the people and give solid money, gold standard money, and fractional reserve banking, give solid money back to the people, I think you're going to see a lot of the problems in the country get solved pretty quickly.
I think that actually hits on something that is kind of what I was talking about before, which is when you try to isolate what is the problem with America, it's like, well, there's this and that and the other thing, and it just keeps going. But it is honestly true that if you really sit down and discuss it through with multiple people, you will eventually find that there are only a couple major issues that need to be tackled, and these are not the issues that our current representatives and senators are talking about.
They don't want to, because it would be death
for the re-election.
It would be death death on a stick if they started to talk about certain things.
Manny, I want to come back to something you said. I am pro-life. I consider myself pro-life. However, there are some situations, such as a tubal pregnancy, where an abortion is necessary.
That wouldn't actually be considered an abortion. That's considered a different procedure. So I would have no issue. Like, hey, there is a legitimate risk to the mother's life. That's no longer considered an abortion medically. It may have a very similar procedure, but it's technically categorized differently.
Okay.
So I have no issue with that. I'm not going to...
I will say that a Jewish friend of mine, a conservative Jewish friend, once made the comment, because we had discussed abortion, and I said, well, you know, he was pro-life, and I said, well, okay, and I gave him the example I gave you. And he said, well, there's something in the Jewish tradition that says the mother has a right to defend herself. And if that pregnancy is a risk, a serious risk, a medical risk, not a trumped-up risk to her, she has the right to defend herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And end it.
There's a difference between a perceived risk and a legitimate risk. There's some states have started saying, hey, if this person would be emotionally affected by the birth of a child, then they now have the right to abort a child. I would say an ectopic pregnancy where there's legitimate physical risk to the mother, that's a legitimate reason for, hey, this is no longer a viable pregnancy, nor is this child even alive at this point.
Yeah.
There's a legitimate reason for a procedure like this. In the case of the emotion, no, that this child still has rights, and it retains those rights, and it needs to be protected.
I would like to see abortion go the way of smoking. Now, let me explain that, because I know that sounds a little weird. If you walked into any restaurant in the 1970s, there was a blue haze about 5 feet up, and there were ashtrays on every table. If you watch old movies, everybody in the movie is smoking.
Every doctor recommended you.
So what you had was a cultural change. Mm-hmm. That slowed it down. I'm always a little surprised now when I see people smoke, because we know so much. And because culturally, smoking is not as acceptable as it was even 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. I would like to see abortion follow that same path.
And that's more like, I'm not saying like tomorrow we're all going to snap our fingers and abortion is gone, but it's more likely to follow a very similar path to smoking, where it gradually kind of just falls out of the general consciousness as more people wake up to the reality. This is a child. It has rights. It is a human life, and it deserves the protection.
And we saw an effect. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we saw the effect of Daniel Patrick Moynihan commenting on the Great Society, when the Great Society came in and said that in order for a household to get federal finances, the father couldn't live in the household. Mm-hmm. And he broke up that act broke up the households in Harlem, in New York. Because
if you economically incentivize people to be single mothers, or for fathers to just sleep around, then you will have a culture that will follow that, because there's an economic incentive to it. And number one, best thing you could do right now is bring fathers home. So let's bring our troops from overseas. Let them be dads in their own homes. They don't need to be fighting wars abroad. Let's focus on ending the wars that are fighting internally. Let's bring back dads into every realm of possibility, into education. We need more male teachers. We need more male nurses and doctors. We need men to step up to the plate and take the position God gave them.
Also, if you go back into history, into Harlem in the before 1960s, before the welfare programs were passed, 98% of those families were intact. I don't even know what that number is now. It's probably less than 20.
I just want to go back to the abortion thing for a second, because I think conservatives tend to get on their high horse with abortion, and I agree. And like, I'm fully pro-life, and I will always stand for that. I've worked for multiple pro-life organizations in the past. But one thing that I always bring up to conservatives is, okay, we want to be pro-life. I think it's time that we start talking about the adoption system and the foster care system and how to reform it, because what is annoying to me is we say we want these kids to be born, but then we refuse to adopt systems to try to allow for basically to allow for those kids to actually have a space to go to. To me, it's, how could you say, oh, well, their life is worth enough to inconvenience the mother's life and all these other things, to the extent that now we're going to take this child out and we're going to put them out in a world where they don't have any support groups, they don't have anywhere to go. I'm not saying that life is not worth it. It is. But we should be the strongest advocates.
And we should be supporting those mothers. We should be providing those mothers with the care they need, the financial assistance they need, and the things that they need to get their life together.
Yeah, that is really, really great points there. I think a lot of the time people confuse being pro-birth with being pro-life. Hmm. Being pro-birth is wanting these children to be born and then not wanting to take any responsibility after that. We, as you said, our adoption and foster care systems in this country are deplorable. They are. It's like, it makes me angry to talk about this because of how mistreated these children are being. But we're expecting them to go out into this world and we're giving them no assistance, and mm-hmm. we're expecting them to be, you know, to thrive in this country. But we're not giving them the things that they need to be successful in this country.
I actually saw a thing done by a guy that I watch on YouTube. He's a House of Representatives in Virginia, or I guess they call him House of Delegates. But he was talking to a group of men, and he's like, men, it's our fault that we allow abortions to happen. Mm-hmm. He's like, you guys will do daddy things, but you're not willing to be a daddy. Don't do daddy things if you're not going to be a daddy. And I think that's on the men, because we need to understand, like, there are consequences for your actions. If you kill someone, you're going to go to jail. Like, there are, everything you do has consequences. We need to own up to ourselves. And it's not just one side that has the problem. It's all across the board.
Was that Delegate Freitas? Or?
Yes.
Highly recommend. I used to work for the gentleman. Highly recommend his podcast.
What's his name?
Delegate Nick Freitas. Okay. Wonderful man.
And on top of that, the fact of the matter is that a woman can get pregnant once every 9 months, or, you know, with those weird pregnancies mm-hmm. where one can happen, you know. But a man can get as many women pregnant as he wants in a year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of less of making the woman take responsibility, but also encouraging the man to take responsibility for their actions and to take responsibility for the things that they do. Because, I mean, it takes two to tango, right?
Absolutely.
And I completely agree. And it's to me, what infuriates me more than anything is these guys are like, oh, well, I couldn't help it. No, you made a decision to get this girl pregnant. You made that active decision. Don't sit here and then come back and be like, well, now I got an abortion because I don't have an option. You had an option. You could have not gotten her pregnant.
And I'll actually probably add to that when we talk about one of our later questions about how we might be able to help this problem that we've got going on in our country.
Okay. My next question is, what concerns you most about the future?
The rise of secularism. We have a culture that is increasingly post-religious, post-God, and going towards the religion of science. Science has a role and an very important role to follow. But when we make science the sole thing and end humanity and separate humanity from that science, now all we're looking at is materialism. We're looking at a cult which only seems to progress further and further. My biggest fear is the rise of transhumanism. this movement seeks to advance humanity by morphing it with machines. It's something I fear, and I think far too many of us in our generation are a little too open to it.
Manny, can I ask you to define science? Because I'm going to split out. There is science, and there is what's called democratic science. In other words, if a majority of people believe it, it has to be true.
Science being defined as the study of nature. I love science. I could talk about it all day. I could talk about it for quite some time. But it's when we put science in a place it does not deserve to be, when we treat history like a science, when we treat culture like a science. Not everything can be defined by numbers and math. Some things are artistic. You can't define art using math. So you shouldn't use science to define art that way.
I won't be able to get through this before we have to go on break, but what I would like to get into is the loss of civil society, being kind to one another.
Keep going.
My problem with American society right now is we used to be able to be Republican and Democrat and then sit there and be like, well, we agree on this. We had common American values, and I talked with Manny about this extensively, is what is it to be an American? What defines what an American truly is? And the truth is it's not an easy thing to define. Does race come into it? Does where you come from come into it? All these questions of where does this, what truly defines, you know, is it a hot dog and hamburger? Is that what America is? Or are we more than that? And I personally put it on the values that we have. And I think we all agree that we, for the most part, you know, we want to be left alone to be able to do our own thing. We want to be able to have these rights to be able to think and speak the way we want to speak without government interference, without other people's interference. Those fundamental freedoms are who America is. Today in America, all you see is everyone yelling. No one wants to talk. And that's not constructive. You will only see ourselves turn inward and fight each other inward. And as Lincoln said, they're not going to take us by force. We're going to destroy ourselves, basically.
We are a long way from the days when, after the legislative session, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would go out for a beer.
Thank you, folks, for staying with us. We did go a little bit over time, and I think it was greatly appreciated that we could go over time and that we've got that flexibility. Please stay with us.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in Newbern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Okay. Well, I know I mentioned earlier as an educator, kind of contextualized my answer surrounding who I am, helping kids and how to think as opposed to what to think. And I am encouraged a lot of times by my students just to pick up of where my husband left off. I've been thinking a lot about prioritizing connection over convincing others. It's something that I walk into my classrooms trying to emphasize for my students. And I found walking in, I was expecting a lot of this heat, a lot of this tension with my students, that they were going to be arguing and up in arms about some of the topics we would bring in. And it was the opposite. They were very willing and open and wanted to engage with one another. And that surprised me. And I think it highlighted the difference between my generation and theirs, because I remember being in college, being in a poli-sci class. You were heated. People were sweating by the time they left the classroom, right? And I don't find that to be the case, at least not in my classroom. And so I am hopeful for that kind of change to happen. I don't know what role I could play in it, but I do see good things happening in terms of them moving towards connection and a version of accepting one another that isn't this forced acceptance, or at least yelling each other in the name of you need to accept me, but being more along the lines of listening to one another, actively listening to one another and finding a basis. So
what I'm going to say is pretty much going to be kind of piggybacking off of what Josh and Hannah said. I just hope for more kindness and acceptance in our society, and just acceptance of people being their most authentic selves, being their most authentic versions of themselves. There is a lot of bitterness and anger and just unfriendliness in this country now. And it's, like we've said before, it's more... there's a lot more of people yelling at each other rather than them trying to actually have a genuine conversation with each other. And they're not looking for connection. They're looking to tell you why they think that they are right or why they think that what you say is wrong. And I just hope that in our society we can hopefully teach the new generations just to be more open to what another person has to say, and just to be more kind, because you don't know what's happening in other people's lives, and you can't even pretend like you do just looking at them on the outside. So
I just want to go back and make sure I'm qualifying what I mean when I say acceptance, and I want to make sure Emily and I are on the same page when we're saying this. I don't mean acceptance in the sense that I agree with everything you're saying and everything you say you are or say you believe. At acceptance in the sense that I am willing to listen and engage with you, disagree with you, and we're both okay with that disagreement.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
Where do you think the conflict comes from?
If I could speak to that, I think it's... I think there are foreign actors involved with this mm-hmm. that want to divide America. I also believe that there are internal incentives to have divide. I mean, think about it just from, like, just take the media, for example. How do you keep people watching? Make them mad. Make them mad. It's so easy to make people mad, and once they're mad, you're going to stay engaged. It's so much easier to do negative campaigning than it is to do positive campaigning, because negative things stick with people. Bad news spreads. And just like you could go time after time and look at example after example of that happening. So I do think there is an element of foreign actors involved in trying to divide us. But I truly believe it's just our corporate structure and the cronyism and all that stuff that has caused the idea of, like, well, we want to divide ourselves because we want to be angry at each other.
Well, also every bit of news now is based on if it bleeds, it leads. that you always, and the news cycle is, again, is not a 24-hour news cycle. It is a 30-minute news cycle. Every 30 minutes, you hear that same bad.
So kind of just to add on that, I agree with that. I think that another reason for why we have so much tension in the country right now is because, I mean, when I was taking a push in high school, one of the things that we spent a lot of time talking about was the idea of nationalism in our country. And I think that a lot of the time people have their own kind of ideas and their own kind of views about how they are being nationalistic to our country, how they are being supportive of our country. And I think because everyone's views of what they do is so drastically different, everyone is just kind of like on their high horse about this. Everyone thinks that what they're doing is their embodiment of the country, but you know, everyone is so different that they can't understand that other people have different views than them.
It's easier to say I'm right than to say we might both have a point here.
Absolutely.
Okay. In your education, did you learn about the founding documents of America?
Absolutely. I learned them front, back, you know, in between the lines. We talked about everything. I seriously had a great history teacher who made sure that I was very educated about the history of this country.
Okay.
My high school education was wonderful. I had a wonderful history teacher, Mr. Randall. It was brilliant. So we absolutely learned that. I will say it got, when I say it got lost, I mean, I learned a lot more in college in a way that knowledge got overridden by other things because I only have so much cognitive bandwidth. And so you can imagine it's overwhelming and immersive. And from what I understand, if not every curriculum, but a lot of curriculums at the university level, you have your general ed, your core classes, and that might involve two history classes and a poli sci, but that was all I...
Hannah, quick one on that. Again, going back to your, did history teach you how to think or what to think?
Mm. Mr. Randall taught me what happened and then asked, what do you think about that? And one of my favorites was when he was getting into more political science stuff, we actually did role play and he actually gave us issues to talk about, which was really good. And overlapped a lot with Bible class where we had debate. So I appreciated that.
I just wanted to clarify that my teacher taught me the past. He didn't teach me how to think. He just taught me what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, I had an extensive amount of... I've become kind of known in the circles I run in as, like, the constitutional guy, the guy that understands these documents. It's just... it's what I've saturated my entire self with. I have a whole bookshelf of just, you know, Plato's The Republic and all these older books of, like... what was not just what the founders were saying, but like what they were referencing when they were discussing these concepts.
I would say as compared to the average, mine was far and above incredibly deep into history. I had incredible history teachers. Our school principal, who I occasionally taught sometimes, was incredibly good at what he did there. But I think his main area when it came to that would have been morality, because there's a common thread you guys keep bringing up is, should they teach you what to think or how to think? And I think I'm going to be the odd one in the room, but I think they should teach you what to think. Because at a certain age, you are too young to start making up your own ideas. You have to be given the initial information.
You need the foundation.
You need the foundation. So like a computer can only work with the data it's provided. Mm-hmm. At a certain age, you need to be given that data and given like, hey, let me guide you through it. Now, once you get to the college level, at the level you're at, Hannah, yeah, it needs to switch because now it's the time for debate. Now it's time for these other things. Mm-hmm. Upper high school is a great time for that as well. But when we're talking about the very foundations of it, we're talking like fourth grade history through lower high school. That's when we're talking like, hey, this is just, here's the data. Mm-hmm. Here's how our worldview, according to what school you went to. And if you don't mind me asking, what type of school did you guys go to?
I just went to a public high school in Swansboro, North Carolina.
Yeah. I want to answer that, and then I do want to respond. My high school was a private Christian school in Zebulon, North Carolina.
Okay, likewise.
I agree with the banking concept, just what is that information that's, you know what I mean? Like, there can be certainly information data we're giving students, and we're banking that information, but
So let's what use is that one example. Let's say we have a kid who says, hey, all drug use is good and moral and right. Mm-hmm. It would be good of the teacher to tell him, no, you are wrong, and here is why, and guide them through that. Okay. So okay. It's saying it's correcting obviously incorrect statements or statements that would be incorrect in a Christian worldview. So if you have right. it in a Christian school and you have a person who says, no, Satan was the good guy,
right.
it would be good and moral and correct for that teacher to say, no, you are wrong, and guide you through it
okay.
and get you to the right spot there.
Gotcha.
And as I said before, I was homeschooled all the way up to college. But what I can say to the, it's kind of what my dad taught me. He always said, when you're younger, because I said so is a good enough reason. You don't need all the ins and outs. You know, when you tell a kid to stop running into the street, you don't have time to sit here and explain the ins and outs of how cars work. Like, it's not time to debate that. It's time to keep them from putting their finger in the electrical outlet. But when you get into, you know, now they're like 10 years old, 14 years old, 15 years old. It's time to start really having them understand this is the rule. This is why the rule exists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got one more. In your education process, what do you think should have been added or removed?
I'm going to say a lot of it comes from, it's going to come from a Christian perspective fundamentally, because that is who I am, and that's what's going to shape a lot of my worldview, if not all of it. It's a lack of understanding of the fundamental doctrines of the faith. Mm. We were not taught until 11th and 12th grade, here's what it means to be a Christian, and here's what it means this. Here's the practical side. There was so much emphasis on everyday living that you forgot to teach us, here's what God is like. They forgot to teach us, here's what baptism means. Here's what these other fundamental beliefs mean. So we were doing all the actions but didn't understand the why behind it. We had done the work. We were doing the fellowshipping. We were doing that other stuff. And in a secular world, you still have that. You're taught you should act like this, but you're never taught, okay, what is the philosophical underpinnings of it? So I think a concentration starting as young, I've seen people do it as young as 8 months old. You start catechizing your children with, hey, what is God? God is the one triune God. So on. Starting at 8 months, as soon as they're able to speak, they're able to start making the confessions. Having an emphasis at that early of an age, start nurturing them in the Lord, start bringing them up at that point, you're not going to have this crazy nonsense you see at 12, 15, so on and so forth.
Okay. Josh?
It's really a hard one for me to answer, because when I look at education as a whole, like public education, I can easily point out, okay, here's what I would change with the public education system. But if you're asking me what I would change with my education, I don't know that there's really too much that I would have changed. If I were going to train my kid, I would train them very similar to the way I was trained, because, like, I had access to materials, was taken to the library as a kid, like, it was allowed to explore ideas, but also was told, hey, it's time to stop that or don't go there. So I'm not going to say my parents were perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, at the same time, I think the way I was taught was pretty good, but I would like to eventually circle back to what I would change with the public education.
Very good. I'm going to break in right now. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters again. We'll be right back.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Let's go. Hannah?
What Manny was talking about really resonated with me, and it circles back to where I started, where my ideas are influenced by my experiences. That was very much my experience growing up, and certainly the creativity there was in my education, starting with my family and my early education teachers. And my faith was a big part, but looking back, I think there could have been room for growth in terms of explaining why or really solidifying the pillars of my faith and why I believe the things I believe, because by the time I hit college, I was like an empty sponge. I just started soaking up everything around me. And you're so eager to learn. You're so eager with new experiences. I will say that the course of my education, I have a love-hate relationship with what I've learned. I do appreciate and do like that so much theory and different perspectives were added. I just feel like I never got the full perspectives. For example, at least the schools I went to in my experience, it was highly liberal, not very conservative at all, and I would have appreciated a more well-rounded approach to the things that I was learning about. Because everything was entrenched in politics. The further up I got in my education, even something like writing and composition, it would have been better to have had those firm underpinnings to help guide me, because I was just like a ship with no anchor at that point.
I didn't really have any kind of experience with my education being politically guided. I think that there are a lot of things that students can learn in public school that are beneficial to them, but I think that there are also a lot of things that we do in the public schools that are not beneficial to the children. And one of those things that I have a problem with is the fact that we teach so much about these subjects that isn't applicable to the future of mm-hmm. the children. Yes. And specifically, one thing I hear a lot of people complain about is how much math we teach to the children. Like, I mean, up to a certain point, it's like what geometry or algebra one is where you really stop learning anything that is applicable to your life as an adult, unless you want to pursue some kind of math degree. I think that in place of those higher maths, we could start offering classes that will teach students more economic skills, like we talked about in our last session, how everyone is always saying that Gen Z doesn't know how to write letters, or they don't know how to address letters, they don't know how to write checks. We don't know how to do these things because we weren't taught these things. And I feel like adding these life skill classes back into school, like home economics, I know that was a class for a while, would actually be incredibly beneficial to these students going into their adult lives.
I agree.
Absolutely. And I would have to disagree, because I think home economics should not be a topic that should be taught in school, but rather at home. It's home economics. I think you should be taught calculus at a much younger level. I think we've made it too easy. We've seen students who can achieve a lot more and are not able to do. Look at the burnout gifted kid. He can do a lot more if he was given the motivation and the activities and the possibility of achieving more. We could be at a new level of math if we had stopped trying, we have something called grade inflation. We're so used to like, oh, well, that was too hard for this class, so we'll adjust it slightly for this class. Instead of trying to bring people up to a higher standard, education should bring people up, not trying to find where they're at. Let's bring them up from where they're at to a better place.
I would have to say, I think that's very wishful thinking. As much as I would like to believe that offering these higher math classes and offering these things will be beneficial to the students, as that gifted kid that burnt out, I can tell you that there are way too many factors that go into a child's education and go into how the classrooms are run and go into classroom management than... There are a lot of things that go into this of teaching of students. And when you start asking them to learn these things that they know are not going to be useful to their adult lives and that you know are not going to be useful in their adult lives, that's when you start losing them. And that's when you start losing the learning and it starts becoming less of learning and more they're being forced to be there. It's not, I'm not asking you to dumb it down to bring the kids up to that level. I'm asking the schools to teach things that will be more useful for these kids in their adult lives so they go into the world better prepared to be adults rather than these empty sponges or these ships without an anchor.
Agreed. And because of that, we've seen, I can give you an example of one great school in Utah, a couple here in I think in Kingston, where the kids are able to speak Greek, Latin, very well done English, and have started to learn French at age 12. They're reading the classics at that age. And again, we talked earlier about bringing dads back into the community. A lot of this stuff should be done by parents when it comes to the home economic stuff. And the thing is, our current economic structures, our current systems of governments and all the rest don't allow parents to be parents. And because of that, we've left parenting up to teachers. And teachers don't have the power to discipline. Teachers don't have the power to be parents because it's not their job. We don't let parents be parents, and we don't let teachers truly be teachers.
You and I agree on that.
I actually agree with you, Emily, on the fact of, like, the way we teach education should be applicable. And I think instead of the way we have set up our entire classroom system is designed to be an industrial classroom. The whole purpose is to crank out cookie cutter citizens that are intentionally designed to be like the way that we want them to be able to work in this world. The problem is you have some people that are brilliant at math, but are not good at literally anything else. You have other people that are great at art, but are terrible at math, and that's okay. And what we need is we need to be able to, instead of saying, oh, we're going to lift everybody up, everybody's got to learn Greek and Latin, which, by the way, Greek and Latin, they have their uses.
Absolutely. I'm not saying everyone does.
But instead of having it be a industrialized education system, let's, just like we should with the government, decentralize it and instead make it more applicable to the student. So if the student has this knack for fixing cars, we make him the best mechanic in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with our system is we are so focused on the education system as far as curriculum goes, instead of customizing that curriculum for the student.
And I would agree. And that's an example. If I had more time, I'd go into this more, but we have to use children as if they were wood. You work with the grain, never against it. So if you have a kid who's great with the mechanical stuff, you put him into a place where he can start learning that stuff. I'm not saying every single child needs to be able to learn Greek, Latin, and all the rest. I'm saying a lot of our children have the potential to do it and should be given the opportunity to do it. But our current system doesn't let them do it because we're doing these other things. I have to also push back against the notion of it has to be economical. It needs to be teaching them practical skills. Who defines what that is? There's a great book back from the 60s who goes over the problem with that system, because who defines what is going to be the job of the future? Those things constantly change. You can't have the government or some other system say that. Ideally, yes, it could be a free market system where you have different ideas. That would be wonderful. But under our current system, when we talk about classes need to teach them this, this, and this, one, you take that away from parents, and two, you have government define what the job of the future is rather than letting the market decide.
I want to cut in
be public
just
education.
A minute, because I want to show you a different angle on this. Students should prepare children for the real world. I totally agree with that. And one of my favorite teachers when my kids were growing up was a teacher who taught them how to read a map, balance a checkbook, understand a commercial, make a shopping list, and create a budget. How many of those skills are now obsolete?
Mm. Yeah. And it's the thing, and because we have a centralized system of education.
That is the fundamental problem right there, the centralized system.
It
is,
but I mean, these skills, nobody uses maps anymore. Nobody balances the checkbook. They do it all electronically.
But that's my point, is that if you decentralize the system and make it so that it's not the federal government running it, not making it the same for everybody, but allowing the customization, you allow for the students to actually get that help they need.
Absolutely.
I want to just bring up an example about being a music teacher. So one of the things that we have in our education system right now is we have Common Core in place. And we have the centralized ideas, basically, of what you can teach in the classroom and what you're going to be tested on at the end of the year. Now, firstly, one of my favorite little kind of comparisons is you can't just ask a monkey and a fish to climb a tree and then grade them on that.
Exactly.
So one of the things about being a music teacher is that we are still expected to adhere to these Common Core, categories. And but how, as a music teacher, can you test your students on their creative abilities and on their ability to be a musician, when being a musician and being an artist is so non-linear?
Subjective.
It is. Yes. It is. It is so personal to the student themselves.
Right.
So when I think about education, that's one of the things that I really think about. Is yes, this may seem like a great idea to all of the students, but when you really get down to the meat of it, when you really get into that classroom and you start working with those students, every single student is different.
One of the biggest flaws I see that we ever brought into the education system is the No Child Left Behind. Because what we basically said is instead of bringing up children and helping them not fall behind, instead of doing that, we brought back the overachievers and basically said everybody must be equal. It's like, no, you don't build up the weak by beating down the strong. Mm-hmm. You don't do that.
Exactly.
Go for it.
I feel like we've danced around all over the place in this conversation. It's hard to pin down exactly where I'm going to fall, but I will say I do think you're onto something. I go back and forth on decentralizing or centralizing education. I have mixed feelings about it because my mind always goes back to what kind of access do kids have, and sometimes that's as simple as what kind of parents do these kids have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'll leave it there.
And it's, secularization has caused a lot of things that we are going to have a lot of repercussions for in the future.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, folks, we went into overtime on this show. I will knock out one of our own ads and give us the
thank you very much, all of you, for being part of
this.
We
appreciate your
really
time.
We appreciated what you had to say.
And again, listen to us again, CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.